Let's be real, folks. B loves this song. He requested it.
Nope. I chose a number. I don't know anything about what song it is.
Crank it, Landfill. Say goodbye. All right. Either B. Mitch requested it or Pat Leonard requested it.
Pat Leonard.
Pat Leonard joins us now from New York. You can follow Pat at P. Leonard, NYDN, New York Daily News. Check out his podcast, Talking Ball with Pat Leonard, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Pat, what's up, dude? How are you?
Man, that was a smooth intro. The vibes with the Commanders, I can tell, are just sky high.
You know things are going good when you can play Wilson Phillips unironically.
No doubt.
If you have some vibe questions, we're happy to discuss them. What are the vibes in the Meadowlands, dude?
Oh, they're bad. Three straight losses. 10 points combined in their last two home games against the Bengals and Eagles. And as bad as the season's going, JP and B. Mitch, at home, the Giants have been absolutely horrendous. They are 0-4 at home. They barely score any points. In those two games against the Bengals and Eagles, they actually scored a total of 3 first-half points in the two games combined. Damn. It's like the pressure that they're under increases tenfold when they're in front of the fan base that is just tired of seeing the same old thing. And frankly, you guys, it's an interesting juxtaposition because the Commanders franchise obviously revitalized a new life with a new staff, but of course led by the new quarterback, and the Giants are stuck in neutral with the quarterback that they really don't believe in anymore, but they're still trotting out onto the field.
It's crazy. We had this debate the other day, and it was kind of just internally. But if you go back a few seasons, do you think the Giants wish they lost that playoff game in Minnesota? Because Daniel Jones looked really good in that game, and it was based on that. They paid him, right?
Yeah, no, they would not trade the playoff win, but I think what they would do is, to your point, I don't think they'd be able to do it because this is who they are, but they would try not to overreact to that game. And then 2 weeks prior to that, he had a big game against the Colts at home. So it's like when you set – they have to write this like on a whiteboard when they're about to make these decisions. Like, we're about to pay this guy $40 million a year because he had two great games against the Colts and the Vikings. You know what I mean? Like, you just say it out loud. You're probably not going to make that investment. No, I think to your point, JP, they just overreacted to one result. And it's been their MO, whether it's how they handle their coaches or how they handle their quarterbacks. I mean, if you guys remember when they extended Eli's tenure past his due date, his expiration date, it was cited by Dave Gettleman at the time that Eli had this great game against the Eagles in December during a season that didn't matter. It was like one game where he had thrown for like 200-some yards. And so when you're making decisions one like game, that, you're going to get what you deserve, really.
Is the – like, I understand how the fans are with the play on the field and things like that, but is pressure mind on the people making decisions?
Yes, there is. But what I wrote about today for the New York Daily News, B. Mitch, is – I don't like the way that – I think everyone agrees that they need to move on at quarterback, but to me it feels like, you know, what I'm calling it is Operation Dime Out Danny. You know, I feel like it's, hey, everything is the quarterback's fault. Once we get a new quarterback, everything will be fixed. Please don't look at everything else that's hiding behind this curtain over here, because their roster decisions, their draft picks, the fact that they have a first-round pick – quitting on the field, now benched last week. You know, you look at the general manager's first-round pick, you have Kayvon Thibodeau on injured reserve, you have Evan Neal not playing, you have Deontay Banks benched and not giving maximum effort, and you have Malik Nabers, who is a special talent, but has had a tough couple weeks and really is coming off his worst game so far with several drops. So I think, to your point, B. Mitch, you know, Dable is grasping at straws here, and the operation that is supposed to be the foundation of what they're running here is just as much in question as the quarterback.
Here's my question for you, Pat, and I'm not trying to, like, rub this into Giants fans, because I know we have Giants fans that listen to us, right? But just because they live in D.C. and they get used to it. I understand John Mara, every time he gets a chance, says nobody's job's on the line, we're trying to grow this thing, we're trying to do it the right way, etc. And I understand if you look at the turnover since they fired Coughlin, it's been significant and it's been consistent. And I get wanting continuity, but how can you watch this product and think, okay, Danny Dimes the problem, we're going to get him out of here, and then we're going to let these guys find us the next guy? And, like, how do you want to reinvest with the Shane Daboll group?
Yeah, I think, JP, that John Mara saying what he said to us the other day was a little bit of like, okay, what else am I going to say right now? If I you know, put more pressure on them, I'm essentially saying the firings are coming, just give it a few weeks. So I think what he was doing was buying himself and trying to buy the team some time there. I mean, despite John Mara saying, I did believe him at the time when he said, you know, we're not making changes in season. He did leave the door open, though, too. I don't anticipate making changes after the season. I mean, I'll tell you guys right now, like, I think this coaching staff is going to be done at the end of this year. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I'm not reporting that, but, you know, if this stays on the same trajectory and they don't turn it around, John Mara's stated barometer at the end of every season is, when I walk off the field at the end of the year, I want to feel like we're headed in the right direction. And to your point, it, objectively, you cannot write everything down and look at it and say that Shane and Daboll have this team in a better place now than they did when they took over.
Does one have it better than the other? Are they in the bed together?
Well, the Giants' history, B-Mitch, is always to give the general manager a longer rope, and also to not want to blow up the entire kind of back-end processes of how they've done things, especially because they've changed it over and really given Shane, you know, total control as far as how they operate, how they draft, all of their operations, and how they scout. But, you know, from my vantage point, Shane is as involved. He's more involved in this operation than I've ever seen a GM here. And I think you could probably equate it to the way that Howie Roseman is involved in Philadelphia and kind of that, like, baseball GM model. I mean, he's involved in film studies, reviews with the team. He's, you know, connects to the locker room. He's out there at practice every day, very close out on the field. So it's very difficult to me to separate the two. I personally think, if they're being honest about it, you're evaluating both of them either way. You're either keeping them or firing them both, is how I view it based on the objectivity of kind of how it's running.
Specific to this week, you know what? I do want to ask one more. I think Bobby Johnson has gotten here and the offensive line has been really good here. I think it's kind of interesting. He was run out up there. There were a billion injuries, and maybe they didn't play well either, but I don't know that any O-line coach was fixing that thing with all the injuries the Giants sustained last year.
Yeah.
Watching the Monday night game and seeing all the penalties, seeing Daboll flip out, seeing them bench Deontay Banks, weirdly, maybe he deserved it, but I don't know that he deserved it in the game like that. How do you think the actual coaching is going up there? In-game preparation, that two-point conversion, what the hell was that? Like, how is the soup to nuts of the teaching, developing players going?
Yeah, Daboll actually said in defense of that play, he was trying to rationalize, like, we spend a lot of time on these things, we should be executing them better. But he said in an interview yesterday, basically, that they've practiced that play as much as any play. So that really didn't come off very well, as much as he intended it to. It's like, well, that's pretty worrisome. Bobby, if you're listening, you know, I would tell Bobby Johnson, just, it's like in Goodwill Hunting when he says, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. You know, like the Bobby Johnsons and the coaches who got either run out of here or who, when they left of their own accord, were blamed for the shortcomings of this operation. I think everybody, if they're looking at it, understands that they were not the reason this team was losing and was dysfunctional. In fact, a great example is, like, Josh Izudu, a player who Joe Shane drafted in the third round out of North Carolina as a guard. Last year, they moved him to tackle pretty late, and he ended up really struggling. That's how Daniel Jones injured his neck. And it was clear that Azudu just couldn't do it and had been put in a bad position. So it's like, okay, let's give him a year. Let's give him a new offensive line coach, and everything's going to be better because, you know, the way we were coaching him, all these things that we were doing with him were not good enough. Well, he steps in as the starter at left tackle when Andrew Thomas gets hurt against the Eagles. He lasts exactly one full game and gets replaced this past week after one game by a guy they got off the street, off the Niners practice squad, Chris Hubbard, who gave up about 12 pressures to Alex Highsmith in their loss to the Steelers. So that's just one example of how the reputations of these coaches get smeared when they leave and they get kind of scapegoated and pinpointed. And that's really the similar thing that to me that's happening to Daniel Jones right now. It's like it's always somebody else's fault. It's never the guys who are actually running things. And, you know, it was interesting in the week two matchup with Washington and the Giants because the offensive line for Washington obviously was winning that matchup, especially in the run game against the Giants' D-line. But they just had those false starts and those penalties in the red zone that prevented them from getting it in the end zone. So I'm expecting this to be kind of a complete kind of full circle moment for Bobby Johnson and that unit. Because as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot in those spots, I think they're going to have their way on Sunday.
Hey, you were describing to me that they always pass the buck. And I don't think that no organization ever want to be consistently good if the people making the decisions blame all the people that they pick. You know, you picked them, so it got to be your fault.
Exactly. No, and that's, you know, and B-Mitch, like, you've seen this in the league too, but you can move on. It's not going to feel good, right, if someone gets fired or someone gets cut or someone gets demoted in on the depth chart. But there are just different ways to do things. And, you know, that is not the right way to do it. And that's what you're going to see with Jones, you know. Like I just called today for in the Daily News, I just called for to the Giants and said, like, listen, if you don't believe in the guy, just bench him. Just bench him. Just sit him down. Don't play him anymore, or stand behind him, show that you believe in him. But don't say that he's our starter, and then after a loss to the Steelers where a zillion bad things happen and you have Dexter Lawrence screaming at teammates on the sidelines, not in a good way, you know, you come out in the postgame and you reveal to the media before we speak to the quarterback that the quarterback was the one at fault for the critical game-changing play in the fourth quarter. That is just not the way to do things.
That's not. It's crap.
The pick was terrible. You know what I mean? Like, he messed up, but the whole thing was just a mess. Tyrone Tracy has been running the ball really well. Does Shane Daboll, do they feel a little validation on letting Saquon walk? Or have they tried to puff their chest about that? Or do they know there's no right way to try to handle letting Saquon walk?
They have not puffed their chest about that. They deserve credit for that pick. I mean, the kid's a good player.
Yeah, and, he's been good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good, you know, and he's hurt right now. He has a concussion. He's in the concussion protocol on a short week. That's one of the things to watch this week is how he recovers and whether he plays on Sunday because that is a big deal for them. He's got some power to him as well as some get up and some speed as a former wide receiver. But they haven't puffed their chest because especially after what Saquon and the Eagles did to them, there's not really much that they can say about that topic and come off well. And then the other thing is they know it's about consistency. Like one big issue with Saquon, especially when it comes like from the Giants' perspective and Joe Shane's perspective, anybody who believes in that positional value, part of the argument is that they'll say, look, running backs don't stay healthy. You know, they dip off. And so right now their promising running back is hurt, right? He had a shoulder injury. He had a concussion. It just comes with the position. You're taking a beating. It's a violent sport. So, you know, that's what I would say about that. But, yeah, really good player.
Expect him out this week?
Yeah, I don't know. We're kind of – today and tomorrow will be the day. I know I've seen him. I see him tweeting, but that doesn't tell us anything about his ability to play football. Yeah. I would think that he's a tough kid, but it's just you never know how somebody's going to react to this. Usually, JP, when the weeks are shorter like this, like they're coming from Monday concussion to a Sunday game, usually that makes it tougher for guys to go. But yeah. You know, we'll see.
I wish we knew exactly what they look for. Because like you're saying, when it's a short week, they don't make it. Longer week, they normally come in. Some guys is there in a week. Some guys 2-3 weeks. I would love to know what they're looking for. I've had a concussion, and I look at all the stuff that's going on today, and I never seen anybody that had one that deals with a lot of stuff that they see that they put out there today.
Interesting. Well, they definitely have a baseline test. So when guys are healthy, they give them the same test as a baseline that they do if they feel like they might be concussed, or they can compare the results to that baseline. That's one. And then the other is, let's say you sustain a concussion and you have certain symptoms. Let's say it's headaches, right? Like Malik Nabers had like bad headaches. And so his symptoms didn't go away after 1 or 2 days. He still felt it in his head. But then after, I think it was maybe like 5-ish days or so, he started to feel better. So once you get to the point where you can report the absence of the symptoms, then they let you do, you know, non-contact, you know, weight work or, you know, jogging on the side. And then if your body responds to that the next day, then they let you get on the field and do non-contact route running, practicing. And then if you respond well to that, then they graduate you that way. So, you know, there's a specific protocol and they have to follow it and it has to be steady. So that's why, like, if he's not practicing today on Wednesday, and then he's not limited and ramped up tomorrow, Thursday, then it becomes difficult to get the player to the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard the same kind of stuff I have, how guys do try to game this like anything else. I mean, this is their livelihood, and the checks aren't guaranteed, right? That if you do real bad on the baseline to start, that it's a lot easier to pass it when you are in the protocol. But let's hope that the docs and the people in charge are smart enough to figure that out if we can come up with a theory anyway. Mm-hmm. So looking at this week particularly, I think Washington is a much better team now than they were week two. But still, that week two game kind of came down to Dable not having another kicker on his roster, you know?
Exactly.
Which is just asinine, but will you confirm for me, Pat, did they have an empty roster spot in that game?
Yes, they did have an empty roster spot.
They had 52 dudes, and they knew the kicker might be hurt, and they just left that roster spot empty.
Yeah, interesting part of it, JP, is to your point, what we were just talking about concussions, but, you know, when the player says, I'm fine, I can do it, sometimes that complicates it too, right? Like Graham Gano trying to push through and then them deciding not to, and then that happens versus like a few weeks ago, their punter, Jamie Gillen, sustained a left hamstring injury in practice, and he could have said, I can do it, I can power through it, but he knew that based on where the injury was, if he tried to kick with it, he might be out 8 weeks instead of 4 weeks. Now he's going to hurt himself and the team, so he says, yeah, I can't go. And so part of it's on the player, but that was complete negligence on the Giants' part. I think it was Jordan Rodham from ESPN who had an interesting kind of report about like a big meeting that happened that Saturday where there were some tense conversations, not knowing exactly what specifically it was about, but might have been a debate about whether they were going to elevate a kicker or not.
Man, you know, you care about the health of the players these days, man.
That's just crazy. But my greater point
there, still trying to get an 18 game.
Right. Is that the last game was close. And I think, you know, the line isn't particularly big in this thing. What do you expect on Sunday in the Meadowlands?
Yeah, no, you're right. These games, they always feel like they end up being tight. To me, this has to do, whether the game is close has to do with the Commanders' defense. Like, I think I talked to you guys maybe about it at the time afterwards, I don't remember, but Washington's defensive plan when the Giants and Commanders played in week 2 didn't make any sense to me. Like, they just ran like a lot of cover one with man-to-man on the outside, and they left Neighbors in kind of one-on-one coverage, and often they gave him a cushion, and the Giants just kept getting like easy completions, catches, and runs to him. And really, you know, I know you're not trying to get beat over top, but I think you play a zone against the Giants. You know, it's a much better way to handle it, and you don't let a guy get beat by Neighbors because he will win a lot of 50-50 balls, and that's how the Giants have to move the ball, is unlock number one big time. The Giants have the worst run defense on the other side of the ball in the NFL. They allow 5.4 yards per carry. I know the Commanders still allow 5 on their side of the ball, but I think Brian Robinson Jr. is going to have a huge day. And frankly, if you watch the Steelers game, the only time the Steelers got themselves in trouble on offense and shot themselves in the foot is when they didn't run the ball. You know, they were throwing the ball well in the second half, but like they went in shotgun and threw the ball on like a 3rd and 1 in the Giants' territory. And the Giants' defensive line does lead the league in sacks. They have 35 sacks, not just the line, the defense as a whole. So you're playing into their hands if you throw the ball when you could just hand it off to a punishing back like Robinson Jr. But, you know, I think the Giants are going to get whooped. I think I would hope. I mean, you know, if I were a Commanders fan, I'd be go watch the first half tape or the whole game tape of week 2 against the Giants. And you're wondering what Joe Witt Jr. and Dan Quinn are not adjusting to in that game. If they come out of that and they understand there's a different way to defend the Giants, I don't even think this game will end up particularly close.
Pat, last thing. When you say whooped, what's the right spelling there? W-H-O-O-P-E-D? Yeah. How would you?
Whooped.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's how I've been saying it. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but yeah.
Pat Leonard says run the ball 50 times.
I'm sending the tweet right now. Talking with Pat Leonard about Week 9 Washington versus New York. Quote, I think the Giants are going to get whooped. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you for putting me out there like that. I'm looking forward to checking my mentions.
Join the crew, Pat. Join the crew.
Do you want me to holster my sidearm here? I don't have to send.
Yeah, that would be nice of you. But if you don't holster it and you let it fly, you know, it'd be nothing I haven't said before. So
all good. I owe you one. I holstered it. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, bro.
That's our guy, Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News. Does a great job. Check out his podcast. He goes all over the league. When we come back, you will hear from Dan Quinn.
Hey, it's Brian Mitchell here. The NBA is back, and FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, wants you to catch all the action. And right now, FanDuel is giving everyone 3 months of NBA League Pass. All you have to do to catch every tip-off and buzzer beater is place any $5 bet on the NBA to get 3 months of NBA League Pass courtesy of FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/Brian to make every moment more this season. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA. FanDuel, sportsbook, the official partner, 106.7 The Fan. You have to be 21 years old and present in Virginia. After 3 month free trial, the full price of League Pass will be automatically charged monthly. Cancel anytime. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. Limit one pass per customer. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan, coming to you live from Commanders Park. We all know Dan Quinn talks to us every Wednesday. Let's go out to the park and take a listen.
All right. How's everybody doing? Good, thank you. As we get started for today, for us, that's back to Competition Wednesday. And we have really established a precise nature in getting ready. And we never assume it. And that's why we put the work in. And the process of the week is really, really important, what we do on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, because all that work has to be done before go time. And so you can't look ahead to the game. You just have to stay right in it. And that's where we're at today. So glad to get rocking with you guys. And if you want to open it up.
Starting with a specific one, how close is the linebacker tandem of Bobby and Frankie to what you guys imagined when, you know, you signed them back in March?
I think a lot has come to life for that in terms of the blitzing, in terms of how we feature the guys. I think Joe's done a really good job, and Ken as well, of knowing what everybody's strengths are. Obviously, with Bobby, it was easier to see that with Ken's history and my history with him. But with Frankie, I had a really clear vision of what he could become. What I wasn't didn't know as much was the energy and the confidence and all the support he brings as a teammate. And that has been a really big lift for our team.
With Bobby specifically, you've known him forever. How has he evolved the most, I guess, since you first got with him in 13?
Definitely from the communication aspect. And I thought in this last game, it was really him at his best, where there were some calls that had to get checked and communicated back to people, and then after the last second step around somebody to make a tackle. But I thought in this game he really demonstrated real poise about it. He always has that, but there was another level I thought that it went to of in and out of checks to go, because of the nature of Chicago's offense with the shifting and the motioning to go and on the ball. So some of the calls he made on himself, you know, not from the sideline.
Do you have an update just on how Jaden's feeling coming out of the game, but also Cornelius and Brandon Coleman?
Yep, point? I'll hit you on all three of them. So Jaden will do some practice today. Brandon Coleman is doing well, and he'll also work back into practice, and Cornelius Lucas won't with his ankle injury. So we'll see where he looks like as the week goes, but both Jaden and Brandon will get some practice in today.
Well, is Jaden's injury something you'll just have to kind of monitor as the season goes on?
Yes.
The rookie class, I mean, you've gotten some really strong contributions from pretty much most of them at this point. I mean, how have they kind of come along? How have they developed in your mind?
Yeah, that's an awesome question, Nikki. I think what makes me think about those guys first is like the maturity of this group. And they have, you know, really leaned into one another and spend a lot of time together, whether that's, you know, Yossi McCaffrey and others that just on the field, off the field, the spending the time. But they were really ready for the challenge. And I think some of that comes with their maturity. A lot of them have been 4 or 5 year guys into that space. So they've really bonded. And the older guys have a lot of respect and regard for them because of the way they compete and they can be counted on. I think the older players, that's what you want to see in a young guy. Can this guy help us? Will he be the same? Will he deliver? And so when they're able to do that, that's a big deal.
When you have a win like this, have there been teams in the past that maybe you worry how they respond, and how and what gives you the confidence that this team will respond exactly the way you want them to?
Yeah, it's a great question, John. I think because of the precise nature that we do to get ready, it does allow you to get right back into it. You know, all the things that we have to do on a Wednesday and a Thursday and a Friday. And so today we spend so much time on tackling and breaking tackles, and then tomorrow it's into the ball and ball securities and takeaways. Happy New Year. And then the after that on to Friday, you know, winning time moments. So we really work hard at that, John, to make sure the process of the week can take care of all the learning. So it doesn't leave you a lot of time for that. And then also tell the truth is a big part of it, too, because to be a good team, you have to handle the stuff. And the stuff can be a lot of things, from injuries or a big win or anything that comes down the pike. And so handling the stuff, it's something that we talk about with them. I'd rather have the discussion about it than not. And so handling the stuff is part of becoming a good team, and you have to prove you can do that.
And then with Jaden, he's had some touchdown passes that are big-time throws that are have low probabilities for success from in general. Why is he able to, you think, complete some of those? The Hail Mary with the one, couple, you know, the Bengals one, I think one of the Ravens one. Why is he able to complete those in those situations?
Yeah, I think let's take the one from Sunday out, just because that's not normal. So like we'll take that one out. But I think when you're talking about like at the Cincinnati one, a blitz coverage. Okay, I got a shot. It's 1-on-1, but it does have to be in a precise nature to get there. I'd say a good bit of it comes from the work that the guys put in together. And you can remember even from training camp, extra early. I can remember when Noah Brown first got here, him doing extra with him. They hadn't had time to connect. And so little overtime moments like that, not overtime game, I'm saying extra work to put in with people pays dividends. And but you have to have, you know, space to do that. And I think that's a big piece of that.
You mentioned Johnny Newton stood out to you in the game the other day. What has your view of him in terms of like how you see him ultimately playing out his role? Has that changed at all since you've had him here? And just in general at this point, what do you kind of see him being?
I think it probably sped up some, Ben, you know, due to the injury to John. And so, of course, when we got him you know, when you had setbacks with injuries, that's not something that you're prepared for. But I knew the player, and I knew, you know, days like Sunday were coming. And so to see that come to fruition and the confidence that goes along with that, I think that's really important. But I knew that part of his game was there, and we had seen it in practice. You guys hadn't seen it in the game yet, but I knew that was, we were knocking on the door for that.
And with regards to Jaden and Malik Nabers, obviously another game with both of them here, they both have clearly come into the league very strong. I don't know how much you studied Nabers because you were focused maybe on the quarterback, but what do you sense of the competitiveness between the two of them? Have that maybe pushed them both to get to this point and to succeed as they are?
Yeah, and I think both of them, I think you said the right word. It's the competitive nature of them. And that's true with a lot of players who, you know, come through LSU into that space, you know, like some guys that have really stood out into some spaces. And they're two that, you know, are demonstrating that over and over again. But oftentimes you can take that competitive nature a little higher when you have someone to do it with. And I sense that was probably the case with the two of them, and spending extra time and doing it together. There's a certain level that your skills will get to, but then if you get to do it with somebody else, it can rise up even more. And I sense that was probably the case with them. I don't know Malik, obviously, like I know Jaden, but man, was I impressed on the tape of what I saw.
Hi, Dan. You mentioned all the stuff, handling all the stuff. With that stuff comes the success, the limelight with all this winning. How do you want your team, your players, to embrace that success element?
Well, I think you've heard me say the word before, but it's poise, of knowing that there's, with confidence comes, like, you put the work in and you're confident to go play, but you have to have poise. And that's what you want, to make sure that, like, all the moments happen because of the work that you put in, not just because they happen. And so I think that's what poise and confidence do, knowing that, like, we're able to do some things because of the work you put in, and that generates confidence to go play well. And so if you do that over and over again, then you start to, you know, create an identity and have confidence. And this team has a lot of humility as well. And that also, I think, is a big piece of staying in the moment and going to the next thing. And stuff can be lots of stuff. It's on the field, it's off the field. And just staying, like, with a lot of poise, I think, is a big piece of that.
NFL trade deadline is next week. There's been a lot of trades already this year. As a head coach, in your experience, how do you evaluate kind of your roster and try to figure out when to make a move, not make a move? Take me kind of through that process.
Yeah, and fortunately for me, you know, that's Adam. And we talk about the team every day, you know, and we'll be after practice going through the injury report and the game of, you know, what's next. So, at this time of year, lots of phone calls are made. I don't know how many deals are made, but it's increased for sure over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, and especially with the trade deadline moved back just a bit. I think that's added a little bit to it, but Adam's really the one that keeps me up to date and up to speed onto that.
I know you say that the schedule kind of precludes you from concentrating on what just happened, but do you have to say something to this team at all about, because of the way that game ended, do you, to move them forward?
Yes. And, yeah, like most things, Chick, I'd rather talk about all of that. To say handling the stuff is dealing, both left tackles were out, and you handle the stuff. And, you know, dealing with injuries and coming back from, you know, being down, or the emotions that go with it, that's also part of it. How do we handle ourselves in the locker room, on the field? The next one, fortunately, there's some really cool leaders on this team that are able to step in and maybe be in the spaces that I'm not. And that's the guys like Wagner and Ertz and Luvu and many others that are ready to step into that, to that space, and knowing, hey, this is where we're going to lock in to go do our stuff. So you do have to reset, but I'd rather talk about it than assume it would happen. And so let's acknowledge it and then put the work back in before we get to go time.
All right, that's Dan Quinn talking to the media here at Commanders Park. We're going to take us a quick break. We get back, we'll talk about the things that he said. Be Mr. Finley, 106.7 The Fan. We'll be right back.
All righty, folks. Honestly, the answers we were expecting and wanted to hear, you got right there, specific to Brandon Coleman. Dan Quinn said Cornelius Lucas won't practice today. I imagine he's not practicing this week. We'll get more information on that. But for right now, Brandon Coleman is expected to practice. You got to get back on the field before you can get cleared from the protocol. But my lean as of Wednesday at 12:50 is that Coleman starts at left tackle in the Meadowlands. Do you have a similar lean, Brian?
I mean, if the other guy's not practicing, then I would guess that's how it goes.
Yeah. I also, with Jaden, I think barring a setback or something that, like, specifically hits him in the ribs or whatever, I think we don't need to update the injury status anymore. Like, he's going to play. He played last week. He's playing this week. He might be.
I would agree.
He might be limited on the report or something. Mm-hmm. But I think that has been proven now that he's going to push through and kind of keep it moving.
Tough as hell.
Yeah, for sure. And he's going to start to feel better. Whatever the time process is, like, that is like a – what he is dealing with is similar to a separated shoulder or something. It's just
I think the average person, they shouldn't even think about how they would react. Because
now,
guys at this level and that does this all the time, they are going to probably react differently. And then Jaden's a young man. He heals differently than half of the people that sit there and think about it. You know what I'm saying? You're in your late 30s on up. You are not going to heal quickly.
No.
Maybe you go.
Do you remember when I hurt my ribs? I was cooked for like 2 months.
Yeah, you're trying to get some sympathy. You don't about to get no damn sympathy.
I was hurt. It hurt like hell. I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And that was playing golf. Like, it was.
Yeah, but you ran into a damn tree.
I did. I ran into a big fella.
Yeah.
I think I really liked his answer on a team has to evolve, because they played the Giants week two.
Yeah.
You know, it was a nail biter.
Yep.
This team is significantly better, but he did say he's like the first tape we watched this week was that game. You are facing the same team, and I imagine
won't be the same team when you see them.
Right. I imagine they'll have a better plan for Malik Nabers this week.
Yeah. You would hope,
but I also think Washington's offense can be way better than they were in that game. That was the first time we really saw these red zone struggles when they had to kick a ton. Seibert's first game went 7-for-7, which is just banana land.
Yep.
But I really liked what he said. It's a division game. We know it's going to be a battle, and we have to prepare for 5 quarters.
Yeah.
A lot of Quinn's message and messaging is about hard work, dedication, effort. And that's the stuff that
a lot of people don't try to push today.
It resonates, too.
Just because everybody today seems to want everything easy and the world has changed, they want you to become like them. No, he still pushes like they did in the olden days, in the pre-NFL stuff. He doesn't do the stupid things, but he still expects you to go out there and do more. A lot of coaches today don't. But they expect you to still have the success level, but they don't push people anymore. They go right along with it, just like some of the parents are doing, and that's why their kids are running rampant over them.
I think he keeps talking about trying to find this extra gear, right? And I think that is so telling of – there's never a feeling of we've arrived.
Yeah.
And I think they have found the perfect marriage of – Jaden is like that, and DQ talked about his humility. They found this combination of people that are always chasing.
Yeah.
And as long as you are always chasing, there's no room for complacency.
I agree.
And I think that is what this organization has unlocked, and it hasn't been here in a long, long time. When we come back, Aaron Schatz joins the program.